On our morning show today from WRCO Radio, the topic is the 765 kilovolt mega line that is being proposed. And joining me is Rob Danielson, who's in our studio for the first time. And good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Phil.
Good to have you in here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Phil, I hail from the town of Stark, which is just north of Lafarge by the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. And there I am, a potentially impacted landowner for this project. I'm lesser impacted now with some recent announcements, but I live on an existing transmission line, and existing transmission lines are where new transmission lines are proposed or have to first be studied and actually built on those if possible. So I heard back in June that there was this possible 765 kV project, and I began going to my fellow landowners and towns and so forth. I am alert to these things because I got involved in back when Badger Coulee was proposed back in 2010. Some of your listeners will remember that proposal. We actually didn't have that proposal in the end because of the actions of our counties and the landowners. And I was at that time on a committee for the town of Stark, and I was charged with reading all the material, and we had a committee of about 7 or 8 local citizens, and we studied this stuff. And I stuck with it because, number one, I was concerned that it was complicated and a lot of communities really could not understand exactly what was being described. I went to utility planning meetings for about 8 years, so actually sitting in the room with the engineers, and became familiar with their perspective on things, along with the planning that goes in, the future projections that are involved with saying this will be needed in the future. And so then when the Badger Coulee was approved eventually by the commission, I got involved in the Cardinal Hickory Creek proposal. And I did this as an intervener or party to a group that was intervening. And so I became very familiar with all of the PSC review processes and with the utility proposals and with the way the staff engineers at the Public Service Commission see things. And of course, hundreds and hundreds of landowners who were very concerned about the impacts on their properties and lives and things like that. So when this came along last June, I went to my town and I said, looks like, the town chair, and at that time, former town chairs were there, two of them, and they both said, well, we just rinse and repeat. We do exactly what we did last time. We adopt resolutions, we inform ourselves, and most importantly, we inform those directly impacted landowners who have a great deal at stake. And we've done that over 100, 200, I think we're close to 300 landowners we have personally notified, and we've done a number of public meetings over in the Gays Mills area. And so basically, it's complicated, but there's two proposals. And so now I'm sitting here in Richland County, hopefully reaching audiences in Richland and Sauk and Columbia County that don't know about this proposal for this big transmission line.
It would cut across part of northern Richland, right? Isn't that the projection?
Right. Yeah. The project proposal, maybe we should go first into like how this differs from other transmission lines that we've, because I know there's two things. How big is it? Where, you know, when I see it, and then where would it go? Would it affect me?
Sure, go ahead.
So the thing to know about this, we've never had a transmission line of this scale, capacity, or length proposed in Wisconsin before. In fact, in the entire upper Midwest, that we would become the very first community that would be actually being approached to house this kind of facility. The towers, if the best way to understand the scale is to maybe compare them to the existing lines that we're familiar with, those wooden pole or sometimes in the H configuration that you see going through the countryside, those wooden pole transmission lines are about 70 feet high, and they sit on a easement or width of service and maintenance width that's about 100 feet wide. So we have 70 feet high and 100 feet easement. the 765,000 volt, and I'll refer to that as KV, so 765,000 KV for shorthand. They have a height from 150 to 200 feet in height, so almost three times as high. And the easement widths are 60% wider. They're 250 feet. So a lot of people have out, you know, both, you know, dwellings that they live in very close to these existing transmission lines, which often follow those first REA distribution lines that were put in that ran from farm to farm. So when they came along in the 50s and built the existing transmission lines that we have now, they, you know, kind of kept them close to the house if it was, you know, doable. And now many of those houses and farms and outbuildings and all kinds of things that you can imagine are actually would be very, very close to this enormous facility. So the scale of it is really, there are sound and visual pollution things that are associated with that property values. We can talk about all of those later, but I just want to help, if I can, viewers understand the scale of this is something that if you drive south of Chicago in a few areas or across, say, there's a string of intercontinental or transcontinental transmission lines that run through central Illinois in those wide open spaces, you'll see clusters of them. This is the scale of the transmission line. And you never see them. I've never seen them in any kind of wooded, hilly area. They always are in these big, cleared out areas. So this is a very novel thing. What I will do is I'll talk a little bit about the routing. So that was your original question there. Before we do that, it's useful to access a map if it's possible. If mm-hmm. the listeners are near their smartphone or their computer,
give them a visual.
I'm going to give you. There's a visual you can look at that because you know this is about the land and the maps. Unfortunately, are the closest thing that we have to understanding the impacts on land. So the string of terms that you want to enter into your Google search there is. I'm just going to read out BIT. Period, LY / 765 map. So that's BIT period LY / 765 map. All right, so you can try to bring that up and I'll go ahead and describe a couple of other things about it. So if this project were approved in Wisconsin, the 765 kV, it would stretch about 200 miles. Crossing the river at Mississippi River at Genoa and going through Vernon County, then through Port, and then over to Portage, right, which is Columbia power plant over there. And then we'll go through Fort Atkinson, Whitewater, Elkhorn, and cross over the border into Illinois near Walworth, and then go all the way down to Plano, Illinois. We can talk about this as an extremely long extension cord, if you will. From all appearances at this point, the project in Wisconsin would be proposed in two parts. This is confusing, so I'm going to slow down here a bit. We call a section we call west of Bell Center, which pertains to this section from Genoa down to Gaze Mills. This is like a 30-mile stretch. And then from that point in space, from Bell Center, another transmission developer, in this case Transource, the one that most of your listeners will be relating to, would continue over to Portage and then go down to the border. So it's roughly a 200-mile long line. Landowners in Vernon and Crawford counties are very much aware of this proposal because Dairyland Power Cooperative and Gridliance, another out-of-state developer, have proposed doing this project from Genoa down to Bell Center and been doing some outreach with landowners and public and open house meetings and so forth. And so the landowners in that area, through our mailings and through the notifications of the developer, are very much aware and been very active. And in fact, both counties have already adopted information request resolutions that put the developer on notice that they need a lot more information, as did Richland County recently, last week. So there's a lot of activity. The Vernon County Board had Dairyland talk to them, and they were very, if you want to go online and look at those meetings, you'll learn a lot about the what Dairyland's ideas are here. So, but Transource, the east of Bell Center, or really, we'll call it the Richland, Sauk, and so forth, they were awarded, if you will, the ability to move ahead with this proposal for the line in January, but we have not heard any formal public comments from them or anything. I was hoping by the time that we had our show today that there would be a little information that people had in their hands, but for whatever reason, that developer is just very quiet. And it's very strange because Dairyland's schedule is very, very fast. For Badger Coulee, we had 3 years from the time that we first heard about the project to the point that the application went into the PSC. Same for Cardinal Hickory Creek. Dairyland announced in June last year and said that they're going to have their application in as soon as July. So this gives landowners and communities very little time. And so that's why we went ahead and said, well, let's just start letting folks, the towns and impacted landowners know about this so that they can begin, for example, contacting the developer and saying, what's going on? I have an existing transmission line on my property. What's going on? Put me on your list. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to your local representatives and things like that? Are they on board?
Yeah, actually, we've had very good response from all four of the area, our particular ones, which would include Representative Johnson, Senator Pfaff, Representative Tranel, and Senator Markline. Senator Pfaff and Representative Johnson have actually proposed a bill. It's SB 1125, and the goal of that bill is to say, hey, okay, look, we got this really big thing that's being suggested that we need to put through the Driftless. We already have one line north of, you know, like from La Crosse over to Madison, and another line to Cardinal Creek that goes from Madison. So we're like literally the only center area of the Driftless that has not been impacted by a big transmission line, and it's the most sensitive area of all of them. So that's a concern to them. Then plus they just had their phones ring off the hook from the landowners calling. So Senator Pfaff and Representative Johnson have proposed kind of rearranging the priority that the state looks at when a new transmission line is proposed. Right now we have existing transmission lines, which we'll be talking about with maps today. But then we also have highways and then trails if there's, you know, railroads and highways. And the last one is new or, you know, unaffected land. They say, well, over these new big mega lines, they want to say, let's site those underground and alongside of existing utility congestion, if you will, other stuff. A rail, like there's a project that was just starting construction in Iowa and northern Illinois that's entirely underground. It's the same scale, the same capacity. It goes from north central Iowa along the Mississippi River, and all the way it follows railroads, and it's buried, so it's like the final easement is maybe 40 feet, 50 feet, something like that. So it's a very not controversial at all. I mean, you know, there's always some properties that are not happy about having the construction and stuff like that. But so Representative Johnson said, let's just change that law. Let's make the number one priority for siting these mega lines buried and in along with congested other infrastructure. We just don't want these things going in places where we value everything about, I mean, there's something really special about this area when it comes to our landscapes. We're very attached to them.
Absolutely. Are they in relation to the proposed data centers, Rob?
That's always a question that pops up. So the best analysis that I have of that, because a lot of the information that we hear about data centers and all stuff, it, be aware of who's stating that information. You'll find that the utilities, the parties who are most directly impacted and involved in, you know, these things, at least the electrical side of things, they're not really screaming the sky is falling. They're saying, yeah, there's going to be demand for more power and stuff like that, and we've already built out a huge transmission system. We can talk about that. But and the person who is in charge of evaluating the need for this 765 project, his name is Dr. David Patton. I encourage listeners to look him up and read some of his comments. But he said basically, if you take the data center demand and you take electrification, which is the slow transition that's happening with electric vehicles and electrification of other things, that even if you put all of that demand together, it does not merit a transmission facility of this size. So he calls the assumptions that are being made about in the planning of the regional utilities exaggerated and unrealistic. They just expect way too much development of remote power plants. You might know this, Phil, but today our energy use in 2024 was actually less than it was in 2004. And the need for transmission is always measured by that one day of the year when all the air conditioners are on and everything is running at max, you know, peak demand, we call that. Our peak demand is actually flat too for the last 20 years. But that doesn't mean that we stop building power plants or that we stop building transmission. All you have to do is drive around in Wisconsin and see that even though our need is virtually the same as it was 20 years ago, the utilities have done very well at putting in a lot of new infrastructure. So my understanding, based on David Patton's, Dr. Patton's findings, and then also on just what I read when I read what the utilities are really saying, the demand for data centers is being promoted by, billionaires with lots of money to spend to figure out how to get, you know, return on that money. And a lot of the private equity companies that are behind Transource, for example, like Blackwater is one, they're really into this AI, you know, thing. You can read a lot of publicity from a lot of people who have a lot of money to spend on publicity about like how this is, the sky is falling and the demand is there. Granted, this will all bear out over time, but we have never, in the history of electricity use in the United States, we have never seen that kind of explosion of energy use, and I think that it's extremely unlikely. Like one of the estimates said that Milwaukee, that the demand for the data centers in the eastern part of the state would be roughly the same amount of electricity as the city of Milwaukee proper. Well, I estimate that's around 2.5% of the power. If there's a one-time increase of 2.5% or even 3%, that is not a big burden. We generally have built 17% or so margin in generation. It's just part of our normal game.
You've contacted landowners. You mentioned 300 or so. Anybody in favor of it, Rob?
I'm trying to think, be very fair here. I think there are some landowners who feel indebted to the rural utilities and mm-hmm. feel, you know, they have families, farms that have been there, and their fathers or mothers, for that matter, may have gotten out on the tractor and helped put up those poles, and they need that electricity for all of us do for our daily operations, and dairy farms and so forth use quite a bit of power. I think there's mixed feelings in some people, like, I don't know because I would feel like a hypocrite if I, you know, were to complain about, and of course the utilities know what they're doing is the general thing. But I've never met a landowner who wanted to have a lengthy discussion about information that they had heard from a utility or any other thing that made them feel confident that this project was needed and the best thing for them and their community.
Would landowners be reimbursed then?
Yeah, but that's a good question. So there's actually two levels of reimbursement. The landowner side of things is that the general rule of thumb is that bearing no direct impacts on dwellings, for example, a house or a barn or out, you know, important building being too close to the transmission line for safety, barring that situation, if it's just taking up that additional 125 feet on both sides, going from 100 to 250 feet, the utilities pay pretty much a going rate, whatever the land is valued at. So you'd get an equivalent acreage payment for that, whatever that is. If there are dwellings and things like that directly impacted, it's really hard to say. We had a couple of specialists at our public information meeting, two of them that have represented a lot of landowners, and that was their advice, is that you have to just start discussing the matter with the developer before the application goes in, because the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin expects those developers to work out those hazardous conditions. So when I keep saying before the application goes in, you want the landowner wants that application to go in with those changes, with those severities on their property address, so that they don't have to then hire a lawyer and go through the whole proceeding and wrangle it out afterwards. So that's what we're doing a lot in Vernon County and Crawford County right now, is making sure those landowners are making their wishes known to the developer. But so the landowners actually don't get, they might be, sometimes called a make even, you know, they might get back to the point where the, you know, it's hard to say what the real impact of that is in a lot of ways, but just the physical material aspects of it break even. The towns and the counties, though, in all candidness here, have what's called an environmental impact fee, and they can be tempting. Like, the just do a quick estimate in Vernon County and Crawford County, the one-time payment for the fee for the impact of the project on those counties be in the neighborhood of $1 million. No, hold me to this, but in that neighborhood, whereas the towns who have the transmission line actually sited in them would get divide up roughly half of that amount, so they would get in the neighborhood of, I probably shouldn't be speculating this, but $200,000 to $300,000 on a one-time payment, and then they also get ongoing payments that are much smaller, on the scale of like $20,000 a year or something for the towns. So, but the thing is that that's money that the town gets to somehow offset, the property value losses, the damage to the roads, and that loss of tourism and the impact on the local economy. They're having to account for all of that primarily with a one-time payment, which is, a fraction of the county's budget, big picture. And then the landowners don't get any of that, and they can't by law. The towns and the counties can only spend that money on their own public operations. They cannot divert some of that money to the landowners who are not really fairly, I can't say monetarily not fairly compensated, but universally not compensated for, having something in their lives that affect the wildlife and everything that they love about their place.
Well, that was my next question, the effect on birds and wildlife and those kind of things.
Well, this is, of course, we know from the other transmission line discussions that, birds do collide with the larger transmission lines. I've talked to a lot of the farmers about what life is like with the existing smaller transmission line. They'll probably say, when the humidity goes up, we hear it hum and buzz and things like that. But in fact, the deer and stuff like that like to use the corridors. A lot of hunters will tell you it's an excellent stand location because you can see down good ways. And our animals, if you will, are pretty much adapted to that. But the 765 kV transmission lines, which are not only much taller but have a much wider easement area, so a break in the habitat, also have two phenomena that are really quite unique to this technology. By the way, the 765 kV transmission lines are not new technology. They were developed in the late 60s. So we're dealing with, like, you know, not the underground high voltage DC, which is like Senator, you know, Pfaff's idea of we should go that way. But the two phenomenon are associated with the term called corona discharge. And basically, the voltage and the power that's in these transmission lines is five to six times more than the largest transmission lines that we have in the state now. There's so much energy, there's so much potential for that voltage to leak into the air, particularly when there's high humidity or moisture in the air, that it literally, you know, just is a loss of the ions into the air. And it does two things. One, that emits a high amount of ultraviolet light, you know, like that we can't see as humans, but many animals can see them. I think I have a list here. Actually, I'll read off some of the animals that are affected here. Birds, raptors, bees, cattle, pigs, sheep, mice, dogs, cats, mouse deer, squirrels, prairie dogs, and trout all are very sensitive to ultraviolet light. So virtually all of the stuff really that in my house we, you know, it was like a huge asset, would actually not be damaged by these transmission lines, but they would avoid them. They see that glowing light to a distance of up to 2 miles in some of the studies, and they just go, well, you know what animals do. Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable here. Bye bye.
Yeah.
And so then you have this line, if you will, that goes through, you know, a wooded area or whatever, and you have animals that are a distance of, you know, a couple of miles or so away from them, who are just kind of like, that's not a place that I'm comfortable. And that's the visual part. In fact, there's illustrations that you can see online showing this bright purple, violet, glowing thing, even to our eyes. But the animals, actually, we have lenses in our eyes that absorb the ultraviolet light, and it doesn't get into our visual faculties. But animals, a lot of them, those I listed, don't have that. And so they just see this manifest glowing thing, and that's one of the, we call the visual pollution of corona discharge. On the audio side of things, the high humidity and conditions and stuff like that create those sort of like science fiction, you know, Tesla coil. You know, you've got your sparking and your arcing, and then you've got a lot of humming and buzzing and sizzling, and there's just a whole range of unnatural type sounds that emit from them, and they're really quite alarmingly loud.
So the human ear would be able to hear.
Oh yeah, I actually do make sound level measurements, and I record sounds in environment in very very quiet environments, so I'm pretty familiar with the levels and so forth. The minimum sound level, that is, we'll call it off or continuously on, is about nine. Just the numbers might not mean the units might not mean much, but 19 decibels, 16 to 19. That's basically the same sound level if I went out on the Kickapoo Valley Reserve in the middle of the night when there's no traffic on Highway 131, and I'm hearing just this kind of airy, you know, the kind of spaciousness of the air. That's around 16, 19. That's as quiet as it pretty much gets here in our rural areas. So at that, as you point out, even at that sound level, the transmission line would be very, very audible because it's the same volume, so to speak, and it's also completely unnatural sound, bzz, buzz, hums, you know, all of that stuff. So that cuts through the air. So these measurements, by the way, are made at 65 feet away from the outermost of the wire, so they would drop off over a distance. But at the loudest, when this highest humidity, there's a lot of load, there's summer maybe with all of that, so the wires are all sagging and the power is going through there and the humidity is high. The levels that have been recorded in some tests are as high as 60 dBA, which is like 1,600 times louder than the first example that I gave. So that would be equivalent to if I had one of those My wife just got one of these vacuum cleaners with a, or we, yeah, it's like a, you know, battery powered thing.
Like a
go around the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that 60 decibels is about the level of that. So if you were outside working, it would be kind of like having a constant, and then like that's the same level of sound as like a busy restaurant. I looked up on the natural things. Those, you know, the Bigfoot scares that everyone thinks they hear because of the barred owl screech.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's 60 decibels. But anyway, you could talk more about the sound.
Yeah, we'll take time out and come back. Good stuff today. Rob Danielson on WRCO talking about the Midwest proposed 765 kilovolt mega line. We'll be back with more in a moment. Rob Danielson is our guest on WRCO's morning show talking about the KV Mega Line. I think we wanted to kind of snap back and talk about some of the towns that would be affected in the area.
Thanks, Phil. So the map that I mentioned earlier, you can access that, but I just want to run through and read the actual towns that have existing transmission lines in them that would be looked at by the developer for possible siting of the large transmission line. In Richland County, we have 11 towns. We have Aiken, Dayton, Richland, Orion, Buena Vista, Marshall, Rockbridge, Henrietta, Sylvan, Forest, and Bloom. And then east in Sauk County, we have 13 towns, which include Spring Green, Troy, Honey Creek, Sumter, Merrimack, Baraboo, Fairfield, Woodland, Laval, Winfield, Delona, and Delton. So those, if you're in one of those towns and you know you have an existing transmission line on your property, we are collecting, we are going to be doing some sort of public information meetings. And we also like to meet in, I say we, the town, local people, sponsor, people coming in with information and deliver a lot of it themselves. But we do that, it's really good to do on a town level. So it's a smaller group and the landowners can see each other and get their questions answered. So if you're interested, if you have an existing transmission line on your property and saw or in Richland County, and you're interested in learning more about this, you can contact Janet Johnson, and she's Dayton County, and her email address is Pony Girl, PONYGIRL. So Wisconsin, PONYGIRL @gmail.com. And while we're on the topic here, we've not received any information from the developer, but that doesn't mean that people can't call the developer and ask to be put on their notification list, so they would be the first to get that information. And I have an email address for that. It is jkdemarree@aep.com. So that's jkdemarree@aep.com. The phone number is 614-933-2710. You can just tell them that you have an existing transmission line and you're interested in information about the name of the project. Is a horrible acronym, BECI. Baker Elephant Cat Integral. Okay, so BECI. So you can say, I want information about that. All right, so that takes care of, and you can access maps. Another place that you can go has a ton of information is the same string that I gave before, but to replace the word map with links. So it would be bit.ly/ 765 links. And you'll find a host of maps, including statewide maps, landowner interactions and questions, videos of the public meetings that we've had, and that kind of thing.
Are they needed? That's probably the million-dollar question, right?
Well, according to Dr. Patton, no, they're not. The planning is exaggerated and not realistic. He makes a number of observations. He says that, for example, there's $238 billion in new remote power plants that would be built in order to justify this transmission line. And without making it too complicated, one of the things that's going on big time right now is that because of the introduction of solar, there's no incentive for a utility to avoid getting the profit from building their own power plant. They get substantial profit, 10%. The transmission builders also get 10 to 12% of guaranteed return per year on their capital project, whether it's needed or not. So they really like this kind of investment. But the utilities are saying, like, well, why should we pay another utility in another state to build a power plant, right? And then they get the profit from that. And then we have to pay for the transmission costs to get it from there to here. So we're just not seeing any huge demand on remote. So Dr. Patton says that $238 billion worth of power plants that he really cannot justify, that the utilities are saying must be built in order to build this line. He also points out that all of those investments are directly competitive with the investments that we can make. You know, there's two ways that our utility dollars can go. We have the payments for the debt on the past power plants and transmission lines. There's about 60% of our bills. And then 25% of our bills is like the actual electricity. Right? Or we can take that dollar a month that we send to the Focus on Energy program, and that's what keeps our energy use flat in Wisconsin. States that spend more than that, Wisconsin, we're very frugal or very conscientious with our electricity use, as a, you know, generally speaking. There are only 10 states in the United States that use less power per household than Wisconsin. And the average amount of money that those 10 states spend on helping with rebates, helping people buy that new appliance, helping people get solar panels, having whatever, make those independent energy self-sufficient improvements that really cut down on our bills. Those costs are like four times. They put four times as much money. So we put a dollar a month, they put an average of $4. Those dollars just go into a pool that we pull from when we make the investments to help us get that extra investment. So utility dollars can really go in two ways. And Dr. Patton says, and spending $238 billion on building remote power plants in places that we're probably don't, you know, that and I'm interested in paying for, those same dollars should go into things that can benefit us. And he calls it directly competitive with distributed alternatives, which is a fancy engineering term for us customers making energy choices, which we're already making, but our utilities are leaving that out of their planning. So it's, for Cardinal Hickory Creek and for Badger Cooley, the need was not there. But for this one, the evidence that the need is not there is on steroids compared to that. So I feel very comfortable calling this an unneeded transmission line because the guy who's most qualified to make that judgment did.
What about Senator Trentle mentioning the buried lines? I mean, is that a possibility?
People can call up all of their state representatives. I mentioned this long stretch and encourage them to co-sign the bill that Senator Pfaff and Representative Johnson, it's called AB 1125 or SB 1125. So you could do that. And contact, if you reach out to your, find out where that existing transmission line is. We'll have some maps out, but you know where it is, know that you're on a possible route. And
Any meetings coming up, Rob?
Any meetings? We just need to call, you need to email Janet at Wisconsin Pony Girl and tell her what your interests are, tell her what towns you're in, whether you have a transmission line on your property or not, and we will assemble all that information, and I will go back to the collective group of volunteers. Nobody's paid. I'm not paid. No one's paid for what we're doing. And we will say, all right, we'll commit to this time and date in Richland County, and we'll get a public information meeting, or go to towns. We can go individually to towns.
Very good. Good information, Rob. Thank you so much for thinking of us and reaching out and coming in today.
Thank you, Phil.
You bet. Rob Danielson joining us here. And again, you can contact Janet for more information, as mentioned. And we'll keep you posted here from WRCO with future announcements.